Germans really are the Americans of Europe, for better or worse.
That's what they always say.
And they dress like American tourists. I wouldn't have immediately gathered, other than the excess of Adidas, I wouldn't have gathered from this national park tour group that they were not American until they opened their mouths.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I saw my grandfather in it in the face of every German tourist I've ever come across.
Yeah. Well, unpack that one in therapy. Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals, Orlando Continues to Chase Perfection Edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. Good one for you today. We're going to do two games, mainly because one was of such prestige and ended up being very boring, and the other one being one of incredible playoff consequence and is indicative of a lot of pain that you're going through, maybe as a fan to some extent.
We came in this weekend fully planning to talk about one game that had huge playoff implications, and it didn't turn into that necessarily. And we didn't intend to talk about another game, which suddenly does have huge playoff implications.
Very much so.
We had 2 6-pointers on Friday, and one of them ends up being a true 6-pointer, and it's not the one we thought it was going to be. So let's kick on. Let's do a little whip around.
Yeah.
Before we get there, Evan, what game do you want to talk about first?
Maybe we just go sort of in weekend order. So let's start with North Carolina Bay FC.
Man.
Bay FC's doing it. They're really doing it.
Yeah.
It's a 1-1 draw that should not have finished a 1-1 draw.
It's their first ever draw.
I know.
And frankly, they deserved the win.
Yeah.
It's funny because we're not going to have to eat like crow necessarily about our preseason predictions.
Just maybe yet. We're going to have to eat crow about how those predictions would have actually unfolded across the season.
Yeah, but maybe we'll need to eat some crow about Albertine Montoya, or maybe not. I just feel like this team has astutely added pieces that have improved them over the course of the season, and just the reps alone are... They've come back from the Olympics kind of clicking.
By ASA's model, Bay FC have had the best non-penalty XG differential of any team in the NWSL since returning from the Olympic break.
Yeah.
Plus 3.8, which is, it's like 300ths better than Washington. So if you want to say it's a draw between the two of them, fine. But for a team that looked dead in the water at midseason, this is an extraordinary thing.
Yeah. Do you feel like this is just sort of a course correction, a regression to what they should have been?
Yes.
Positive regression?
Well, no, I think it is a course correction. I think it is It is an acknowledgement that they needed to be more defensively astute and less offensively naive, because they have their biggest area of their improvement recently has been in shoring up the defense. And that's before Abby Dahlkemper got there. Like, this was very deliberate tactical decision. And think about like the players who are getting more minutes. Like, Kiara Pickett has taken Joel Anderson's job. You know, I think that has made a significant difference. Tess Bodie, who was already moving her way up the depth chart before the Olympic break, has taken Dana Castellanos's job. These are players who are just better, or maybe it's through tactical instruction, but have just performed better at not letting big chances through in dangerous areas of the field. And then with the addition of Dahlkemper, and as we have said in the past, maybe the subtraction of Savvy King, this defensive unit just looks so much more organized, so much more cohesive. And yes, we've had our issues with North Carolina, but like, North Carolina's got a good attack. And Sean Nahas maybe didn't necessarily roll out the optimized personnel. His hands were tied a little bit because Courtney Vine had an excuse to Athens. But like, that was not an attacking group that you could sleep on.
Nope.
On Friday. And you're playing in North Carolina. You're playing in their house. And they are very successful in their house. And what is so intriguing to me, particularly about the North Carolina game, which is the best opponent they've played since the Olympic break. Like, not only did they not give up a lot of offense, like 0.9 XG allowed, they generated a ton of great chances. The Oshawala goal is but one of several really, really good opportunities that they had throughout the course of that match. They had full control. It is the version of the Bay FC that we thought we might get back in preseason. Now, they're doing it with different players, but this is sort of like what Bay FC wants to be.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, this team had never played together until the season began. They have subbed in, subbed out, made little adjustments, but I think the addition of Dahl Kemper is immediately paying dividends. She and Manges look really competent. The absence of Savvy King may be helping a little bit here. Caprice Didasco, always a player this pod has been a big fan of. It's kind of only good news right now for Bay. And yeah, they feel very locked on for a playoff spot at this point. If they don't grab one, it'll be that their schedule's a little tough down the stretch and other teams will have had to win more. But right now, on form, this is a very solid team. Do you feel like this is any, is this cause for concern if you're a North Carolina Courage fan?
I don't know. Again, they were shorthanded, so they weren't rolling out their best. What do you expect? Of course, they don't generate a lot of XG when they are facing a tough opponent. Like, that's just sort of their thing. And also, again, it's like, I don't care. Like, you're not going to play the quarterfinals in Cary. And you're not going to miss out on the playoffs because of how large the playoff pool is. So, like, you didn't play great. Nahas, maybe you didn't roll out the best lineup. Maybe that totally wasn't your fault. But shoulder shrug, whatever. Everything resets at the end of October. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they have hopped in my estimation from being the sixth best team in the league. Due to Portland's decline, they are now, in my estimation, the fifth best team in the league. And that's just sort of... They are holding stable right in that mid-table, not challenging that top four for home playoffs. But yeah, they're just stable.
ASA released their NWSL projection model last week. And we haven't seen the updates yet for the past weekend's games. But I would guess that the needle probably hasn't moved from North Carolina having like a 90% chance of making the playoffs and Bay having probably like a 70 to 75% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, nothing.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Like this is just solidifying Bay's playoff bona fides and it's not really moving the needle at all for NC. So steady as she goes.
All right.
Let's go now to Louisville Angel City, which is actually another game of fairly high potential playoff import. And Louisville is back in the fight now because they won 2-1 on a game they probably didn't deserve to win ultimately.
You know what? I'm okay with that. Louisville has played so many games this year that they probably have deserved to win and have not won or have drawn that they deserve a squeaker go in the other direction. Angel City, I don't think this has changed a ton of my views for either of these two teams. Louisville was opportunistic. They grabbed the result they desperately needed. They're still in a good-ish position to try to make their way in to the playoffs. I still think that they are among the better sides vying for a playoff spot. It gets a little harder with that Chicago win in Portland. I don't think Angel City is a playoff team, and I have thought that all season. And this game, they have been maybe slightly better over these past few games. Is that even true? Have they been slightly better? They've just been Angel City.
Yeah.
What's your read?
Really all you can say.
What's your read on this game?
Well, I think it's a very positive sign that you got Janine Becky, Savannah DeMello, and Bethany Balser all in the same
11,
lineup.
Yeah.
Because that is going to be that's going to determine the success or failure of their offensive strategy going forward. Those are your best attacking options, given that Uchenna-Kanu is not healthy right now. Mm-hmm. So, and they clicked. I mean, Balser's header was a bit of good fortune, but Becky took a great chance in the second half that won them the game. So the more time that that unit gets to build and develop with each other, maybe they start winning some games that they do deserve.
Yeah, I think notably, once Becky grabbed the lead for Louisville, Louisville didn't really concede any high quality chances, bar Messiah Bright right at the end. Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's kind of all you need.
Utah, San Diego. I mean, after the first 20 minutes. Utah wasn't bad, but, you know, this game doesn't change anything for either of these teams. Neither of these teams are making the playoffs, and neither look particularly good in the second half.
Yeah, sure. I think that's totally fair. This is the first time we've really seen Utah kept in check in the Konretz era. I thought San Diego did a fine job with that. Delphi and Cascarino put in a great 6-minute shift, grabbed a goal and an assist, which is all San Diego really needed.
Right.
She looks like a real hit of a signing. Not that that's a surprise, she looks like there has been a very limited learning curve for her entrance into this. That's how Utah is wrapping up this season in relatively respectable fashion.
Yeah, sure.
Chloe Lacoste scored, you know. They're getting value out of those 30-somethings they brought in.
I'm not really sure why Mina Tonica didn't get in the game.
Yeah, I don't know either,
it's odd.
That is what it is. Yeah, this is a dead rubber match between two non-playoff teams. We probably... I mean, like, do you feel like San Diego has a chance of scraping in at this point?
No, not really.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of volume now. I mean, they've got 6 games left, given the schedule and given what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, they're on 19 points. You know, they're 6 out. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, we recorded our bonus episode, which is WSL preview with Jesse Parker Humphreys, right before we did this one. And you expressed a lot of concern about whether or not Manchester United can get into fourth. And my view is it's not whether or not Manchester United is any good relative to the 3 teams ahead of them. Is it? The question is, are they any worse than the 3 teams behind them? And I don't think that that's true. I think they could be boring and lame and annoying and still finish fourth rather comfortably. They may not, but I think that's very much on the table.
Manchester United, that is, yes.
Yeah, more likely than not. I feel that way about Utah. Like, they could be fine, but nothing's changing here.
Sure.
Because everybody else is better than them. That might challenge for a playoff spot. And the same thing goes for San Diego.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's press on and talk about...
Moving on up.
Washington and the Dash.
Washington, Houston. Once you take the pen out, maybe not quite the blowout that the raw scoreline or even the raw XG number makes it appear. That being said, it was still a minute 1 to minute 90 domination of the worst team in the league.
Yeah, watching the Houston Dash at this point is just so painful because they are totally incapable of creating things offensively for themselves. Yeah. And Jane Campbell, it's like a siege of Leningrad back there. It's just like Jane Campbell holding off for as long as possible. It's really bad. And in this game, that wasn't a particularly long siege.
Yeah. I mean, I think the story of this game is what Deano Ordonez said to the press afterwards.
That's right.
Which is that, like, we need help. I'm not going to get this verbatim. And it was also in Spanish and I read it translated. So
you're really not going
to paraphrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. But paraphrase, it was, we're floundering. We need help. We need a head coach, whether that means Fran Alonso comes back or a permanent head coach gets hired. But, like, we have no direction here. And for a player to say that on the record, that's scary. That really demonstrates just how bad things are behind the scenes with Houston. Yeah. Because Ricky Clark seems like he's at least from the outside, a fine guy. And you can make it work with an interim head coach sometimes. But it's clearly not working. And it's clear that the players don't feel like they have support from the rest of the coaching staff, from the front office, from the ownership. this is bad. This is really, really bad.
What's funny is how little we're talking about the Washington Spirit these days, just because they keep just like clicking along. Like
they're just clicking along.
Like I mean, recording are, solid, think, great results. We will definitely profile them as we get closer to playoff time. But this team just looks really solid. They continue. It looks like they have the depth to absorb the body blow that is losing Croy Bethune. They just seem like a very dangerous team I would not want to face in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, they have not skipped a beat with Croy Bethune being replaced by Lacy Santos. Yeah. When you have Ashley Hatch, who had been adrift and seemingly out of favor, when you lose Olimata Sarr, throw Hatch back in and she looks pretty good, you know? Yeah. Granted, she scored her classic, yeah, maybe she's a little overrated penalty moment, but still, she looked really solid and looked really prepared to take the number nine spot back because Hatch and Rodman as a duo worked awfully well last year.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it in Washington.
This is why you don't figure out how to trade Ashley Hatch.
Yeah, that's right.
To Utah. Because if somebody gets hurt, guess what? You have the best backup striker. That's the thing we've always been joking about. It's like, oh, well, maybe Ellis Stevens is the best backup striker. Maybe this person, that person. Well, it's actually Hatch who's the best backup striker in the league, you know? Because she's not a backup.
Yeah, if only because Ellis Stevens has also demonstrated that she's a starter. Yes.
Right. But, you know.
Yes, your point stands.
So it's a very funny situation. Yeah, we'll have to talk about them at a later date. Seattle Gotham. Oof. You want to talk about a snooze fest.
Yeah.
Good God.
I pulled over on the side of the road in Colorado to watch this on my phone. So, you know, the analysis.
That was a mistake.
The analysis is going to be spectacular, guys. And Seattle, is Jalen Howell an 8? Is she a 10? What is the plan? Seattle has no attacking teeth to speak of. And a team like Gotham is so well designed to dispatch of an opponent like Seattle in this way. And they did it in such workmanlike fashion. Again, I've been really high on Gotham. We were very high on Gotham to start the year. I continue to be very high on Gotham because they just don't look like they ever really have to get out of second gear. And That's good enough to beat most teams in this league.
Do you want to know what Seattle's non-penalty XG per shot generated was according to ASA?
I'm going to guess it's like 0.03, 0.02.
0.03. Exactly right.
It was bad. And there is, I remember thinking like, they're having trouble even just getting possession, let alone good shots. How many shots did they have in the box last night?
You know what? That's a really good question.
I think the answer is like one.
They had one shot in the box.
That's all I could remember. And again, Gotham, they get something from Delaney Sheehan in the first half. That's kind of all they really needed. The Esther goal is just sort of to close it out and make sure.
It was icing on the cake, exactly. Yeah,
the injury time isn't particularly interesting.
And what's funny is like, I'm looking at the field control map right now. It's not as if Gotham just put their boot on Seattle's neck and controlled all parts of the field.
No.
Like they ceded a lot of control, particularly on the right wing through Cernogarcevic, and just Seattle did fuck all with it. Like the best case scenario for Seattle picking up Nerilia Mondesir and Anna Maria Cernogarcevic in the window was that they would offer some sort of attacking verve in lieu of Bethany Balser. And also those players would have to offer that level of attacking verve against good teams like this if Seattle was going to hope to get into the playoffs. And I should say, we haven't run the projection model for this past weekend's games, but before this weekend, Seattle was in pole position for eighth place. But if you put in performances like this against good opposition, how do you expect to pip eighth place? Like,
I mean, this is why I was always Seattle skeptical.
Yeah.
This is the problem I have and the reason I am Seattle skeptical. It's just they can do the things required to get draws.
But they don't need draws. They didn't. They need wins.
They need wins. And they do not have the tools capable right now, in my estimation, of going and grabbing a lot of wins.
Thank God they got an injury-riddled 31-year-old Hannah Glass to take right back from Sofia Huerta. Like,
yeah, also, like, nothing says I'm punting my season quite like resigning and then loaning Lindsay Horan-style out forever to Leon Sofia Huerta. I don't know what the deal is, Seattle.
You need to smash the reset button, Carlisle Group.
Yeah.
Once the offseason comes, there needs to be a culling far and wide, both with the roster and the front office. And can't believe I'm saying this. Maybe there needs to be a hard conversation with Laura Harvey. I'm not saying she should lose her job, but like you need to have some real truth to power chats about like where this team's going.
Yeah, the vibes are very bad in Seattle once again. It seemed like maybe that wasn't going to be the case.
I'm very interested to see once we run the projection model for the weekend how much their playoff odds changed.
Yeah, softer run-in. This was a harder game.
That's the one thing that's keeping them afloat.
But again, it's really hard for them to claim wins. They just don't have the offensive pieces to really do it. All right, let's go on to our big games.
Featured game number one, which we did for our Patreon subscribers live on YouTube. And, you know, was it our best YouTube live stream? Maybe not.
No.
Was that totally our fault?
No.
I'd call it 40-60, maybe a split on that.
Yeah, going into this game, it had everything. Also, the prior fixture between Kansas City and Orlando had been electric. And maybe we were due for a nil-nil clunker, but holy hell.
It was a nil-nil clunker.
It was a nil-nil clunker with what? They ended up tying on XG or being very close to tying.
They tied to the 100th place, 0.87 to 0.87.
Yeah.
And on XG per shot, it's 0.06 to 0.07. So no one was interested in attacking. And listen, take a macroscopic view. Both teams know what happened in the first match. KC especially understands what the happened in the first match. This was very much we each have the most dangerous attackers in the league. Let's try and make sure neither side concedes. That was the vibe.
Yeah, and if those are the standards you want to judge this game on, I feel like Kansas City can feel slightly better. I felt like they had a better contain on Banda. I mean, Chiwenga ends up with the best chance of the game falling to her pure defensive mistake.
Did she, though?
Did she not? I mean, like, I think when the XG is all said and done, where she takes the shot from, it's not the best chance of the game. But running one-on-one with Anna Morehouse does yeoman's work to make sure she is out at the right place to force Chiwenga to the side and to diminish the value of that shot itself. But one-on-one against the keeper on the break, I think, is the best pre-shot chance that existed
so
this game.
So, where we might see some of the value of the chance you're talking about show up is in individual player G+ for the game. And what I am seeing is Temwa Chiwenga posting 0.2 G+ total on the day, 0.1 of that being shooting G+, 0.1 of that being receiving G+. Interestingly enough, Banda, 0.26 G+ on the day. 0.1 of that from receiving, 0.11 of that from dribbling.
Yeah, she has that chance early in the first half where she beats Alana Cook for pace. And Cook eventually recovers and forces a corner kick. But Banda was doing a lot of productive connective play because the chances for her were not there. She was of forced into the pass, forced into the dribble somewhere else because Kansas City had really focused their defense on eliminating her and forcing other players on Orlando to beat you. And Adriana has a few chances, but Orlando was taking really poor shots from pretty poor shooting locations. You know what this game really could have used? Carson Pickett. From the start. I'm saying it because I know it's coming. And this is, and maybe this is the game where Seb Hynes finally looks at it and says, I have this great weapon that I should probably use and will probably alleviate some of the banda lift.
I'll give Seb Hines the benefit of the doubt. And if you are not 100% convinced that Carson Pickett is the better defensive option than Corey Dyke, for example, then maybe you say, maybe this is not the game where I start Pickett.
Sure.
But when you are staring down nil-nil in the 70th minute, maybe you throw Pickett on just to see what happens, you know? But setting all of that aside, this was a very, very compact defensive performance in general from KC. Like, both of those fullbacks stayed deep. I mean, it was essentially a back three out of possession a lot of the time, with Haley Mace pulling in and Elizabeth Ball pushed up a little bit further, playing sort of as a wing back and interchanging with Ellie Wheeler. And then in possession, that shape changed into more of a traditional back four. But they were very, very concerned about giving Banda any kind of room in places where she could really, really hurt you. And you got to give it up because, again, this is what, the second game that Cook and Sharples have played together. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you got to deal with Banda. That's, I mean, as you say, if you want to give KC the edge in credit or more value getting coming away from this nil-nil draw, that's where you find it.
I mean, yeah, I think that is one arena you could look at it. I also think this is the game that Kansas City basically ended their shield run, like however much value you want to place there. Kansas City.
It's also the end of Temo Chiwenga's goal scoring streak at eight games.
Yes, very true. I think the one thing that gives me pause here is Kansas City is now in a sort of precarious position. They're not going to fall further than fourth, but they are fourth in the table. And a solo home playoff game with the possibility of a road game is not as ideal a scenario as it looked like they were setting themselves up for basically the entire season. So I actually think there was value in Kansas City going for it more than they did in this game. Mm. Whereas I think Orlando can look at this draw and say, toughest game remaining on our schedule likely, or right there. And now we have a 4-point cushion at the top of the table. And, you know, we've kind of got this thing sewn up. We will be playing home playoff games all the way through. So in that sense, I feel like I get why Seb Hines didn't want to give Kansas City the opportunity to grab points in favor of just keeping a 2-match advantage or a 4-point cushion at the top of the table.
I think that's right. Let's go back to the Chiwenga chance that you brought up earlier that came in the 40th minute. So I'm sure it jumped to your head because FB Ref has it pegged as the only quality chance of the game. I went and looked at ASA, and ASA pegs that thing for 0.1 XG, whereas FB Ref has it at 0.2.
I actually think the ASA's got that one right, or closer to right.
I think that's right, yeah.
I think what it is Anna Morehouse coming out and challenging and shutting down that gap and forcing Chiwenga. You know, if you think about the box as a heat map, Chiwenga initially is dribbling into like really hot space. And as she is forced to the side, that heat map begins cooling off. And that's what Anna Morehouse basically did with her chance. She, to give Morehouse a lot of credit in this game, she was playing really high up to cut the window of space for Chiwenga to receive balls over the top. And to be perfectly honest, both of these teams basically gave up on playing through the midfield. The midfield might as well have been a patch of mud in the middle. It was pure transition, defense to front line to hold up or looking for through balls. And Morehouse spent the vast majority of the game on the edge of her box, hunting and trying to eliminate the window into which Kansas City could play a ball over the top to Chiwenga and could eliminate her pace. Morehouse is far enough out already to cut Chiwenga's time and thinking time. And she's on an island, but she does about as good a job as you can do in a one-on-one situation in forcing one of the most lethal attackers in the world into a suboptimal shooting position. So I think ASA gets it right, but I think the points go to Morehouse here.
Yeah, and what's so interesting is that, and we said this on the live stream, is that Orlando, they play press and drop. Like the second the first line gets beat, they retreat into their 4-4-2 mid block. But they were very happy to stay high up and aggressively press Kansas City, especially in the first half, which you would think is an incredibly dangerous thing to do, because once a ball gets in behind, they might be out on an island and really exposed. But that never really happened. And it takes a big mistake for Kansas City to even get, like, snatch half a chance in a dangerous area. So I was very impressed with Orlando's pressing strategy. I did want to go back to the idea that Kansas City just sort of gave up on the midfield or playing through the middle. That's sort of true. If you look at their final third activity, at least among their passing, most of that's coming in that zone 14 area. Could they do anything with all of that centralized zone 14 passing? No, they couldn't. And that's what makes...
You're right. They didn't totally give up on them.
Yeah, the density of the Strom Sams. It was Emily Sams.
Emily Sams who makes the mistake. Yes.
Yeah.
It's Emily Sams who makes this horrendous mistake and allows Chiwenga in. And I think it's purely Chiwenga being Chiwenga that forces that error. She just doesn't have the time. She tenses up. She makes a mistake. Morehouse comes in and grabs it. Kansas City just didn't find a lot of. There just wasn't a lot of joy to be had playing through the middle. It's not that they weren't playing through the middle. It's that they shouldn't have been, based on what the outcomes were looking like throughout the course of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that Chiwenga moment. There's Michelle Cooper deep into the second half that has like a decent look at goal. And then Evelina Dillon right at the death that really could have made this a 1-0 victory. But you know, I heard a couple of people saying like there were moments where the game was exciting. And I'm like, I don't know, three moments really making it an exciting thing? I don't know. So yeah, this was a play not to lose, not play to win kind of affair between the two best teams in the league. So this is what happens.
And this puts Orlando in the driver's seat to win the Shield and to have home field blocked up. And now Kansas City have a little work to do to secure home field.
Yeah, I don't know. If I were Vlatko Ananovsky, I still wouldn't really be bothered by that. Especially if like Sharples and Cook are really starting to click. And if Alma Chilt seems to be the player that she has been in this very, very short sample, then a lot of those like concerns during that four-game skid might be alleviated.
Yeah, I think I'm not overly concerned about Kansas City right now. And I don't think anybody really should be. Finishing in fourth with a home game is fine. It's a little disappointing given where they were, but you held Bart Brabanda to what, 0.2 XG less?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. On the road in Orlando. Yeah. Bully for you. Good job. Like,
you want to talk about it?
You did your job.
You want to talk about a couple teams you are concerned about?
I'm not so concerned about Chicago anymore. They just got, you know, they only needed, what did we say? We thought they needed two, maybe three wins to close this out. They got one they weren't counting on in Portland. And this may end up cocking up the playoff race for teams that have put together more impressive statistical profiles like Louisville or Seattle. Chicago, go into Providence Park, NWSL after dark on a Friday night, and grab a deserved result.
This is where XG per shot is actually a better storyteller of a single game, because total, if you slice out the penalty, 0.9 to 0.55 XG total in Portland's favor would suggest that this was a pretty evenly matched situation. But Chicago only took 5 shots the whole game. So their XG per shot is above league average. It was 0.11. They were taking big chances and they let Portland pepper them, but Portland was held to 0.06 XG per shot. Like, yeah. Portland was never really doing anything particularly dangerous, aside from the fact that they had the advantage on shots in the box. They were even on touches in the box and they had a little bit more possession in the final third. Like, doesn't matter when your opponent like creates a small handful of big chances.
And let's talk about what the big chance is, the opener. It's a horrendous back pass from Olivia Moultrie into no man's land. And in no man's land, Mackenzie Arnold is out. And the goal is effectively an empty net shot.
Yeah.
Like, It's Keystone Cops defending. It's Ali Schlegel just receiving a Christmas gift from Olivia Moultrie and taking full advantage of it. And from there, boy, you just can't give Chicago an early lead. They're very happy with that when it happens. What I see from Portland is just another game. I mean, they've lost 9 games this season.
Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
Yeah.
And they just continue losing games on the trot and looking really toothless going forward and without a plan going forward. Particularly, like, the plan is Sophia Smith. And
yeah,
if Sophia Smith isn't going, I don't see any sort of coherence in their attack whatsoever.
Well, you know, the smart thing to do would be to start Raylan Turner, for one thing. Like, it feels like...
Yeah, the Alex Banstra is just a disaster. Like, this is...
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're the idiots and we're overrating Raylan Turner because this now makes 2 coaches in a row that feel she's not starting 11 worthy. But do you really think that Christine Sinclair and Alexis Spanstra are the answer? The big, big thing about this game is that Morgan Weaver's back. And I doubt she's spending much more time on the bench going forward. And so when you talk about everything having to flow through Sophia Smith, that's not going to be the case for too much longer. So that's a good thing. And they have enough points on the board where I don't think they are going to miss out on the playoffs. And we already knew they were not going to finish top 4 most likely.
Yeah, for sure.
So obviously you want a higher seeded position because you're trying to avoid KC, Orlando, and Washington in the first round. However, you know, it doesn't matter how you get there. You just got to get there, and then anything can happen. So having Weaver back, who looked good at times, will be a massive, massive boon to them.
I mean, Weaver it was a cameo, and she got a hilarious yellow card. But yes, having Morgan Weaver back for any stretch of time improves this team.
She put up 0.1 receiving G+ in 38 minutes.
Yeah, she's immediately huge as a contributor to this team. And she and Smith are an offense in and of themselves. But the problem I see right now is that they will need to be.
Sure.
Like,
there's no plan B.
Yeah, there's just not a plan B. Plan A has not been great. The reliance on Christine Sinclair, Jesse Fleming can't scratch the field in a meaningful way. It just feels like
doesn't make any sense, by the
way. It just feels like
got benched.
I get that Rob Gale's a nice guy and seems to be a solid motivator and makes cute videos for them that hype them up. And all of that is well and good, but he is not constructed what I see as like particularly dynamic or coherent attacking play for this team.
Well, I mean, for me, the true concern that allows them to lose games is that their defense is a mess.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly.
You know, we've always known it's slow. We've always known it was this weird combination of like really aging veterans and really, really young, inexperienced newbies to the NWSL. And it's not gelling. You cannot demand Sam Coffey do this all on her own. Hina Sugita might be out for the rest of the season. We don't know yet, but that head injury looked really scary.
Yep.
And if you lose Hina from central midfield and you maybe Fleming was carrying like a small knock that only allowed her to go for half an hour, fingers crossed that's what it is. But like, if you don't trust Fleming and Hina is not available to go, God, I mean, it's just, you know what it is? On every single line, I don't know if I've ever seen a Thorns team this thin.
Yeah, it's...
And I'm comparing that to the beginning of this season, too. Like, at this moment in time right now, have the Portland Thorns in their 12-year history ever been this thin? I don't know if they have.
No, it's a great question. I think the crazy thing is they've, like, thinned themselves out.
Sure.
Like they,
yeah.
Like
no, I know. We've talked about it before. Yeah.
I see no logic in some of, I mean, other than keeping young players cheap under contract, and we have to speculate on all of that stuff. I mean, if the window is to win in 2 years and you feel like you're just acquiring all the pieces that are going to let you do that, fine. But that wasn't the team that came into this season. And it probably shouldn't be the team that you're building right now. We joked about this team being 5-3s in Portland to begin the season. Now the threes are real. The fives are not. like they just don't have, they're a very mid-table offense with one of the best strikers in the world.
And a really, really grubby defense.
Yeah.
And I would not have thought that I would say Mackenzie Arnold is the only reason your defense doesn't look worse.
No,
we actually can say that because it's not just the penalty save. She also saved a massive Swanson chance in the second half of the game, as well.
Credit to Mackenzie, horrible mistake
for the Schlegel goal, but like she made up for it in the stops that she made up.
Yeah, and like her mistake on the Schlegel goal is not really her mistake.
Sure.
It's Moultrie's back pass. And my heart goes out to Olivia Moultrie for that. Every single player who has ever played this game for any period of time has played a back pass with not quite enough weight and just prayed that what happened, you know, like prayed that what Ali Schlegel did doesn't happen. And sometimes you get away with it and sometimes you don't, and you didn't this time. That said, yeah, Mackenzie Arnold's been standing on her head. Am I convinced by her long-term as the Portland solution? No, but she's proving to be a sturdy piece of gauze on a hemorrhaging leg. Like it's like she's not containing the bleeding, but she's making it look a lot less of a bloody mess than it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really, you know, of teams whose fates have fallen most precipitously in this season, you have to go first San Diego. And after that, I'm hard-pressed to pick a team that I think has fallen further from their initial expectation than Portland.
Especially because Bay is turning it around now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, because Bay is trending in the right direction and putting together performances, Portland hasn't won an XG performance in quite some time at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Truthfully, in quite some time. When was the last time Portland won the XG? Pre-Olympics?
The last game before the Olympics break, which is that 1-0 over San Diego at Providence Park.
And that was close.
And that was the first time they had legitimately won an XG battle in a month. The last one was their home win against North Carolina in early June.
This team is trending toward a road playoff game, and this feels like one and done. I'm not saying Portland's going to miss the playoffs. I'm just saying this is a team that at the beginning of the season, I think I had ranked 2 and you had ranked 3. I think we loved all the tools that were at their disposal. We're now without Janine Becky, and the defense really never sorted itself out. And I mean, is there, obviously anything can happen in one game, but I hate this match. I hate the idea of them versus the Pride. I think you got to hate them matched up against the Spirit right now. We already saw that.
Let's say for the sake of argument, I think at this point, best case scenario is 6th place.
Let's go with that.
And let's say they're 6th place. That means they are likely going to face Kansas City or Gotham in the first round.
Yeah, it's bad.
And they're going to do it on the road. I think they lose to both.
Yeah.
Pretty comfortably.
I think Kansas City has all the tools to completely expose that defense. Already have done it twice.
Yeah.
And I think Gotham have all the tools to deny Portland any ability to score, and they've already done that.
Yep. They've done that in the regular season. They did it in the playoffs last year. And in 6th is the best case scenario. Like if Hina is out for the season, then things could get worse.
Let's talk about Chicago and what Chicago did here. Does this help change your views on Chicago? I thought Chicago executed.
How about that Ludmila?
Yeah. No, I
good game.
Look, I like Chicago.
She looks the part.
She looks the part. And all those points in the bag and another 3 here. They are a problem. The Mal Swanson, Ludmila, Ali Schlegel, opportunistic Chicago team can replicate this kind of performance against Portland against a lot of teams and have all season. Mm-hmm. And it is why they are sitting where they are sitting. Do you feel like Chicago improved. I mean, obviously they improved their odds of making the playoffs simply by getting a win. But
yeah.
Has this changed where you view Chicago? Let's just do like a little like
really.
Bottom of the table. You still think Chicago misses out in favor of
Louisville? Because this, I mean, they took five shots and they were all pretty good, quite good chances. And they were able to squeak out a 1-0 victory on the road. And that's great. But I think I need to see some measure of really them putting their foot on the game that generates more than 0.6 XG total on the day, mm-hmm. even if like those individual chances were really, really strong. Like, and then they have a, we've said it before, like it's a really tough run in. Like North Carolina's coming up, Gotham's coming up, Washington's coming up, Kansas City, they got to deal with Kansas City on the final day. Like this is not going to be easy for them. And the points are the points. And if they beat San Diego and they beat Houston, maybe they get like a point against North Carolina or even beat North Carolina outright. Well, there you go. Again, it's always come back to just how many wins they were able to rack up earlier. But do I think that they win a quarterfinal matchup on the road against probably Orlando or Washington? No, I don't think they do.
I think tactically they are a tougher out than a lot of teams who would be traditionally poised to finish in seventh, eighth place.
And if,
because they are designed to do that. Yeah.
If they were playing Portland or Gotham that first round, you have an argument for me.
Yeah.
But the way things are shaping up, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
No, if the Chicago Red Stars win a playoff game, that will have exceeded what I thought was possible or my expectations.
I will also say that their defense, it does not look that much better than it did a couple of weeks ago. They were just facing a very toothless offense.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like they got to deal with Delphine Cascarino next week.
Yeah.
They're going to have to deal with Courtney Vine and Ashley Sanchez in a couple of weeks. They've got to deal with Washington and KC, again, the final two games of the season. Like Hannah Anderson and Taylor Mollum and Tatum, all those players are going to come under siege.
Yeah, it's a statement of how toothless Portland is that a Sam Stoblis Chicago Red Stars defense kept Portland to a pretty meager XG total.
Mm-hmm.
That hard to have imagined that at the start of this season. Yeah. And that really tells you sort of how far Portland's attack has fallen as well.
I think in the grand scheme of things, again, if we're talking about the playoff picture, I think this was another sort of holding pattern game.
Yeah, it dragged Portland dragged Portland away from the fifth mm-hmm. and into, or away from fifth
Six,
and
seven.
Into like 7-8 territory and really helped solidify Chicago, a team whose underlying numbers don't suggest they are a playoff team. It put them in a better position for them to be a playoff team.
Yeah. But those things are also very much on the cards already. And again, like if Chicago finished sixth, then what, they play Kansas City or Gotham? Don't love that for them either.
No, it's again, some years we've had in this league, we've had like really flat open playoffs. Last year, pretty open. This year, it really does feel like there's a top four and then a next.
Again, I think the first round of the playoffs, that's where we're going to feel things go in chalk a little bit more. But I think after that, like once you get to the semifinals, I think all bets are off.
Yeah, but the four teams who are currently poised to host playoff games, Orlando, Washington, Gotham, Kansas City, are all very good teams. And there is a distinct drop-off in team quality from there. All right. Any other weekend thoughts for you?
No, not really. Well, do we want to chat about like what might look tasty for next week?
Yeah, let's do it.
What do we got for next week?
We got the current and the spirit. It's kind of tasty.
Yeah. Hang on. I've got an idea. Do we put this to a vote?
Oh, do you want to poll this? Do you want to put a poll?
Do we want to poll the fans and have them decide what game we focus on for next week? Because I'm just looking here, like KC Washington's interesting. Bay Orlando's interesting. Louisville, North Carolina is interesting.
Yep. Gotham, Utah is less interesting.
Chicago, San Diego is interesting. Angel City, Portland's interesting. All of these games are starting to really have playoff implications or positioning implications to them. I think maybe we let the fans vote on what we do. What do you think?
Yeah, but I think we don't add the Dash and Rain game as an option for the fans to choose.
That's fine.
This is how we don't
and
end
actually,
up with...
Maybe we take out Gotham, Utah as well. We take out Gotham, yeah, Utah, Houston, Seattle.
This is how we don't end up with Bodie McBoatface as our game of the weekend.
That's right. Yeah.
Like,
got to put our thumb on the scale.
We need to put those bowling lane bumpers on our own fans a little bit.
All right. So what we're going to do is we are going to open a Twitter poll when we post this episode tomorrow or today, Wednesday, when you're listening to this, and you will have the option as a listener to vote on which episode we end up covering for next week among the five that we think really have some real juice to them. So think about it. You'll have until Friday to vote when the weekend's games open up. And we will take it from there. Obviously, we'll do a whip around, so we'll touch on everything. But if there's a game that you really want us to dive deep on,
thank you so much for listening, Evan. You wanna take us out with our
yes. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you will be treated to a really fun WSL preview that we did with our friend, athletic columnist, and CounterPress co-host Jesse Parker Humphreys, talking about the Women's Premier League's limited takeover of the WSL and Women's Championship, as well as some of the highlights of the transfer window as that season kicks off this weekend. Yeah, please subscribe to our Patreon if you haven't done so already. $6 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes every single month, as well as access to our monthly-ish live stream watch-alongs on YouTube, which are a lot of fun, as well as access to our Discord server, where we have a lot of really great conversations, and where we have another competing NWSL projection model developed by one of our listeners, Trevor. So
we love you, Trevor.
And follow us on social media at XOwnGoals. That's the letter X Own Goals. If you feel like we've made an own goal, please email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. If you are a Patreon subscriber, we will speak to you on Thursday for our WSL preview. And if you are a main feed only listener, we will speak to you on Tuesday. Keep an eye out on Twitter for the ability to vote on which game we cover.
Yep. 5 stars. Give us 5 stars.
5 stars. Rate us, review us, tell all your friends about us.
Yep.
And the next time you hear from us, Eric will be back in LA.
Probably.
Maybe.
Likely.
We'll see.
Likely. All right, guys.
Bye.